Welcome to Integra Telecom Directory Assistance.
Integra? Never heard of them.
Take your time.
Service with a smile.
What city and state, please?
The internet?
I'm sorry, the internet?
Yes. We need to do a search.
Oh, okay. Well, all I have is directory assistance. I don't have the internet. Can I help you with a search?
Yeah, can you get us Wikipedia, please?
I'm sorry, what was the listing?
We need to look up didgeridoo on Wikipedia. We've heard that Wikipedia will actually give us a good definition.
Oh, Wikipedia. Okay, let me just see if I have a number for Wikipedia. Just one moment, please.
Thank you. Any luck?
No, just one moment. Let me...
Okay.
I don't have a number for Wikipedia.
And
I don't have access to the internet.
Oh. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that was kind of a bust.
Yeah. I don't think we should do that again.
It's the Bungie Line. My name's Ted Hager.
And I'm Alex Barnett.
And Alex, I have to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Our last episode, the OAuth episode.
The last one.
That's the last one we did. And it was, I thought it was a fine job that was done by the other presenters, not so much us, but the other guys. At the very end of the episode, you told our listeners to get a haircut.
No. I think you misunderstood. I told you to get a haircut.
Here's the problem. It's not that I necessarily misunderstood, because I caught it directly from you, but one of our listeners, M. David, he actually blogs at
XML.
Yeah, blogs at XML. He's on O'Reilly, and he actually blogged about, you're right, Alex, I do need a haircut.
Well, I know M. David. You know M. David. He does need a haircut.
I wasn't speaking to
M. David. I was speaking to you. And as it happens, a few days later, you did get your haircut, and I was frankly relieved.
Actually, I haven't gotten my haircut since then, and my hair's been awful ever since.
I think our audience will be the judge of that.
Coming up, it is Jeff Barr. Once again, this is part two of our interview with Jeff Barr. And if you're not familiar with what the Bungie Line is all about, the podcast that we're putting in front of you here is really about web APIs and developing software for the web. So that's what you're listening to right now. And Alex, how about we get into the Jeff Barr interview and continue on from part one?
Let's do it.
Let's switch gears a little bit and move into some of the evangelism side of things. Actually, you know what? We can't do that yet. There is a subject that we actually started on. I tried to introduce it earlier, and I was thwarted. We never actually hit the subject. FPS.
Okay. So FPS is our newest service. That's a shortcut for the Flexible Payments Service. And so this is a set of APIs to allow developers to move money essentially between any two entities, be those people or computers. So one of the neat things that we have going for us as Amazon is the fact that we've been dealing with money and with payments and with credit cards for a very, very long time. So we have people's trust, and we've got this long-standing experience of what it takes to actually process money. So we've embodied that in FPS.
So what's it? So is it? The closest analog that I can think of for it right off when I hear it, and when I've started to read a bit, of course, is going to be I guess now this puts you in a competitive space, but the PayPal side of things. How much is it like that? Is it for pretty much the same purpose? And what might be better or worse about it?
So think of this as essentially a level below consumer focused payment systems. This is aimed at developers, and this would allow developers to build anything else on top of it. So there isn't simply developers using this will be writing code to move payments from place to place. So also, this one has what's called a micropayments feature, so that we can actually save up or aggregate a number of smaller payments into the point where it's actually viable to then charge that against a bank or a credit card. One of the issues with smaller payments is the fact that the fee per transaction transaction is so high that you simply can't reliably, without micropayments, you can't do pennies or two pennies at a time.
Yeah, and micropayments have been talked about for years and years and years. And having the infrastructure and the service available for developers without having to build their own or do that in a relatively easy way has been quite a challenge. So you're really enabling that scenario for a whole bunch of businesses that are looking at micropayments as part of their business model.
That's right. And plus, anybody that accepts payments has ready access to Amazon's, I believe, 69 million strong base of customers already. So there's a huge number of registered users that are ready to make use of payments.
Clearly, Alex knows what you're talking about, Jeff, but I'm not quite clear on it yet. Give me a little bit, maybe run me through a quick scenario about micropayments and where that kind of starts to add up and how that actually works.
Okay, so let's actually think, if you were a company and you had a web service and you wanted to actually charge your developers to use your web service, and you said that every time you make one API call to the web service, let's say it costs 0.1 cent. So you couldn't actually, in a traditional payment model, you couldn't really do a real-time charge of 0.1 cent for every call, because the processing overhead and the transaction overhead of that would be way too high. But with FPS, you could charge that 0.1 cent to the account as each time the API call is made, and then only when the balance reaches a certain point is the actual charging made. So there's actually two separate pieces. There's accumulation of a balance and then charging of that balance against the payment instrument.
Okay.
And so the micropayments gives you that ability to separate those two pieces.
Makes a lot more sense on that. So you can actually aggregate those charges and then post them at the time when it makes sense economically, because it's enough sense. Listen to me making puns.
That's right.
So do you worry at all about putting the guys from the movie Office Space out of business or anything like that? Bad joke.
In the
movie Office Space. No. We're going to strike that out of the record here.
No, okay. Keep it. It's a good example of how he's not funny.
We don't even sell staplers, so maybe we do sell staplers.
You guys do sell red staplers, I think. Anyway,
we do, don't we? Yes.
So let's get back to the topic of evangelism and some of the stuff that you're doing. You say that this is your job, is evangelizing some of the things that you do for developers at Amazon. You've done it a lot of different ways, I know, but getting the word out there, new innovative ways that are happening. One of the things that we've heard about a little bit is you guys are getting into Second Life and using that as a venue a little bit.
That's right. So at the very heart, I think, of what the evangelism job is about is simply, it's just a communication job. You have to have a really strong technical background, and you have to just simply like to talk to people all the time. Now, that's kind of interesting, because a lot of developers are actually very, very happy to never talk to anybody. And I was actually like that. I'd say a long, long time ago, that was me. I was trying to be as quiet and as shy as possible. But at a certain point, I realized that communication was really central to really making sure that people could actually use the things that I'd built. And so for about a year and a half now, I've been in Second Life in various different forms, and I've found it to be just a really interesting way to communicate with developers. I actually run Amazon Web Services chats every Thursday, and I get up to 20 people at a time attending the chats, and we have a really nice community around simply, let's talk about what you guys want to hear about services, let's get your questions, your comments, and so forth. It's very, very much like you could think of it almost a user group meeting, where we all get together and we spend an hour talking to each other. And at the end, we really kind of get the sense, yes, we actually did have a genuine meeting here.
And so for a lot of people might have the idea, if they've even just started to hear about Second Life, a lot of people come away with that impression that it's almost a game like The Sims or something like that. You guys are actually showing then through this, by doing like virtual user group meetings almost, that there's actually a practical business purpose, and you can get a special interest group going on in this virtual space. That's really what you're using it for then.
That's right. And what I find really, really kind of good at this point is the fact that it's not just us. There's actually events I go to regularly that are from Dr. Dobbs' journal and from Intel and from IBM and from a couple other locations. So there's really, I'd say it's kind of quiet, but I'd expect to see a lot more noise about this probably in the next 3 to 6 months. There's a really nice community of developers inside Second Life that really say this is itself a platform. It actually has web services and supports web service calls as well. So what I find kind of neat is the fact that developers that find Amazon Web Services interesting often look at Second Life and say, as a development target, Second Life itself is also interesting. It certainly has a lot of room for creativity. It's got its own scripting language. It is itself a web service platform.
In getting this going, though, do you find that there's any kind of stuff that you have to do, like a little bit of extra effort or anything to get people to actually consider this as a legitimate venue or anything? Because that's one of the things, as we look at it, Alex and I have both looked at doing that with Bungie Connect's developer network. And that was one question that I scratch my head about is, do you have to get people over the hump into this? Or are developers really starting to understand that this is a serious thing? It's not just the same developers showing up at all the different events.
I think you guys are right. So there's a fairly high barrier to entry right now. It's not easy to create your new avatar and to download the client and to get the client running, to get yourself logged in and actually find these events. And I do know that there's a lot of efforts going on to make that easier. So one of the things I noticed when I created my newest avatar was there's now this orientation island where you go to orientation islands, they walk you through a set of training exercises. Also, there's a lot of work underway that's not too visible just yet, where companies are creating alternate UIs into Second Life. So they've taken the open source for the client, and they've simplified the menu structure. They've added additional kinds of navigation and browsing controls. You'll actually see some of that start to roll out as soon as the end of October, believe it or not.
And those are enabled by web APIs, are they, Jeff?
In part, that's actually a whole different story. There's something called libSecondLife. It's a programming library that actually gives client-side access to the Second Life clients to server protocol.
And that's GPL'd or LGPL'd, right?
I don't know the exact license, but there's open code available.
Yeah, so people can actually get right at the source code. They can munge it around if they need to and those kind of things.
That's right. And my understanding is that the Linden Lab, the developer of Second Life, is actually accepting somewhere around one patch per day taken from the outside world at this point. So that's a really nice start for the open source.
Those guys do amazing, amazing work. How about Startup Project? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. So Startup Project is basically it's a tour that we've been doing. We're trying to make sure that we get to visit a number of different cities. And we have this really nice program where what we do is we find some sponsors. So we usually work with some local investors, be they VCs or angels, to help with sponsorship. We get a nice venue, a nice conference room or hotel room somewhere. We then invite the local developer community to come in, and they get a really fun program. So first they get to hear from a couple Amazon folks, but then they also get to hear from some good success stories drawn from their local area. So for example, we've got one coming up on October 23rd in Los Angeles. And the invited speakers will actually be from that area. So when you see someone up on stage saying, this is how cool and amazing my application is because I built it with Amazon, that might very well be somebody that you know because you've been at another user group or local meeting with them.
Yeah, well, actually, Brad Hintze and I will be showing some of the Bungie Connect stuff down there.
That's excellent. So we have Los Angeles on the 23rd, and then we've got San Diego on the day before that on the 22nd.
Yep.
And what have you got going next month? Anything next month or before the holidays?
I don't actually have visibility into our calendar that far out. Right. I know that we're continuing to choose different cities. I believe that there's a web event in Berlin that we're working on. I think that might be Web 2.0 Berlin.
Berlin, okay. There we
go. I don't have the exact details right off the top of my head on that one.
All over the world, then.
So these startups, some of them must be showing you glimpses into the future with some of their ideas and how they can use the platform. And Jeff, I wanted to take advantage of the fact you see a lot. You speak to a lot of companies. You speak to a lot of startups. You're deep in right at the center of this distributed computing revolution that we're seeing today. I wanted to ask you a more kind of open question about what do you think over the next 3 to 5 years are going to be the really big computing trends that we're going to see take hold more generally, and those that are going to suffer because of it. I'm talking about traditional software on premise or whether it's really going to be more and more software as a service. Just kind of an open view on that.
Well, let's see. So the future is always really hard to predict. To me, what it seems like is what we're doing and what others are doing is we're really reducing the friction between the point where a developer has a great idea and the point somewhat later when they actually can realize that in terms of a running site. So issues like finding data centers and getting racks and putting servers in there, dealing with bandwidth providers, power providers, all those kinds of issues that are none of them are really, really complicated or difficult to do, but they're simply hard, unglamorous, but absolutely necessary kinds of work. So the trend really seems to be if you build your business by using all these different services like processing and computing and storage and so forth, you use those instead of having to do all the grunge work yourself, if you will, and you can really spend a lot more time focusing on what you are good at, on whatever your core competency is as far as building your own business. So I can only imagine that that's going to just continue to go on. I know that when you talk to Jeff Bezos about where we are with web services, he'll say we're barely at day one as far as where web services can take us. And so I can't tell you exactly where the future is going to lead us, but it's going to be easier for developers to build things. They're going to have a lot less friction. They're going to be able to dream really big dreams and to simply do what they would like without such regard for the physical reality sometimes.
Yeah, the physical reality or the capital investment costs or the coding complexity to try and build all of that themselves. I mean, it seems like this is a great time for developers to be able to...
I really think so. And what I'm actually seeing is I see developers really stepping into this space now that are people you wouldn't have traditionally thought of as developers before. Folks that are much more on the entrepreneurial side, that they don't need as much really, really deep technical knowledge as they might have had in the past. They know that they can find people to help them with that. But people look at the very, very large-scale services, and they really think, I can almost plug these things together, and I can find my processing, I can find my web server, I can find a load balancer, I can find a database. And so things that we used to think of as really, really complex system architecture are really download the right pieces of open source code, get the configuration files all set up, and I'm up and going.
So that's all the kind of infrastructure and taking the pain out of that side of things. And in terms of the applications that are succeeding, that people are building today or that you think will succeed, what common traits or characteristics are you seeing around the behavior of those applications or sites or about what they do or characteristics about successful services?
And the converse to that, of course, would be, have you seen any interesting purple cows like in the whole startup arena happening? Has there been any things that really stand out as really innovative uses of the APIs that you guys provide?
Let's see. So common uses, it really seems that people have to be very, very thoughtful on the build versus buy. So the traditional engineer is always very, very skeptical of anybody else's code and applications, and they always kind of think, I can always do a much better job of building than anybody else could, so I'd better build everything myself from the ground on up. The slightly more clued-in developers now realize there's a lot of very, very good open-source software out there and that they don't need to reimplement a programming language or a database or a load balancer or an application framework or any of those kinds of things, that there's far better ones that are already out there and available to use. So I think the role of a developer has changed in the sense of not what can you build, but how much do you know about what's out there, how much do you understand particular frameworks, and not just the framework itself is how does it work, but also, like, where do I find resources? Where do I find the Ruby on Rails community? Where do I find the PHP community? Mm-hmm. And what are the dynamics of those communities? How do I get myself into them? How do I get them to help me out with my issues? Because each different developer community really has its own different kind of operating mentality.
Yeah, there are whole cultures to the different languages and things like that. There's, you talk to a Java developer, and they're going to be very different from a .NET guy a lot of times. So
exactly right.
So how about those purple cows or black swan type things? Any startups that people should possibly check out after hearing this interview with you?
Oh, let's see. You know, there's so many of them in our community that I actually hesitate to just pick one because I know if I pick one that the other 999 that are on my head, they're going to say, why didn't Jeff pick that one?
So that's what we're trying to set you up for. We're trying to set you up for a good shoeing.
Yeah, I don't need that. I get that enough already. So. I actually would rather that people go to the Amazon blog. and simply read some of the stories that we post there from time to time, if you don't mind, just because we do see so many different things, and they're just literally all over the map.
Well, we'll link to that, and we'll link to a whole bunch of the other things that we talked about from the show when we posted on the net, so we can get all that stuff out there for you, including the blog.
Okay.
So with that, we really appreciate you joining us and telling us about all the Amazon goodness that's out there. Alex, anything else that you wanted to ask?
Amazing.
You're all tapped out.
Nah, amazing. Amazon is amazing. They've amazed me for years and years, and what they're doing and the new services they're coming out with, stunning.
Well, you know, it's been just amazing for me to be a part of this and to watch it grow from a little team of very, very intense, dedicated folks to now something that's top of mind all the way going up to the top of the company.
Jeff Barr, Web Services Evangelist at Amazon, thanks very much for joining us on the Bungie Line.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been fun.
So, Alex, it was great having Jeff Barr on the show and everything here.
Thank you.
The guy, well, you're welcome, I guess. The thing is about Jeff Barr is the guy just covers the entire spectrum of the Amazon thing. I mean, there's nothing we can't talk to him about, it seems. There's no stumpers for him except for those metrics.
Well, he's been there from the beginning and plowing on ahead, and they're doing new stuff all the time, and it's a monstrous amount of work that they're doing, and Jeff's bang in the middle of it.
So we want to say thanks to everybody at Amazon for having Jeff come on the show with us, joining us here on the Bungie Line. Alex, anything to add?
All good.
All right. Well, one of the things that we want to say to our listeners before we're out this time is we would love to get some email from you. If you can send an email to alexb@bungielabs.com or ted@bungielabs.com and let us know what you think of the show now that it's been on for a few episodes. We'd love to get some feedback from you. Thanks a lot.